Chapter 8. Styles watches from behind the one-way mirror as his father shows Chris Argent into one of the interrogation rooms. This makes Chris uncomfortable for obvious reasons, but Sheriff Stilinski is quick to reassure him that this isn't an interrogation. "I just wanted to give us a little privacy," he says. "What you want," Chris says, "is to let your son watch without me knowing he's there. Do you think I'm stupid?" Stilinski smiles a mirthless little smile. "Okay," he says. "Come on in, Styles." Styles pushes the door open and hobbles in. He leans the crutches against the wall and sits down at the third side of the table, so it won't look like it's two against one. His father pulls out his wallet and forks over a $20 bill. Styles grins at him and pockets the money. "Told you he'd know." His father shakes his head at him affectionately. "Well, Mr. Argent, it may shock you to know this, but Styles here is not in charge of this operation. When he calls in law enforcement, he yields the reins to me. It's this little agreement we have. Something about me being the sheriff and also his father. So yes, Styles asked if he could observe, but he's not calling the shots." "But you are of one mind on this," Chris says, his jaw tight. "Yes, we are," Stilinski says. "So, here's what we know, Mr. Argent. We know that a couple of kids were shot tonight with wounds that would have been fatal, or at least severely damaging, if they hadn't had their enhanced abilities. We know that there's no way we can even prosecute the shooters for these wounds, because they're already gone. So, right now we're looking at assault with a deadly weapon, among some other various charges. We know that you don't like these people, and we know that you have a code of honor that wouldn't approve of shooting a 17-year-old girl and a 16-year-old boy for pretty much no reason. And we know that absolutely none of this is going to come up in any court case that these people have. So that's what we know. Here's what you didn't know." Sheriff Stilinski pulls out the evidence bag and puts on a pair of rubber gloves. "This is the smartphone of Mr. Joseph O'Malley, who is currently in holding." He taps the screen a few times. "Here's a picture Mr. O'Malley took 2 days ago." Styles gets to see the picture for the first time now, and it's a good one. Allison is sprawled out in the lawn chair in her swimsuit. It's a rather modest two-piece, especially compared to what he remembers Erica wearing, with a little skirt that's spread out over her upper thighs. Her head is turned to one side, mouth slightly open in her sleep, her eyes shielded by sunglasses and a few strands of hair over her face. Styles is suddenly extremely glad that Scott is not in the room to see this. When Chris just sits there, rigid and silent, Sheriff Stilinski slides to the next picture, which is also of Allison. Now she's lying on her stomach, and that little skirt has ridden up just a bit to show the back of her thighs and her rear end. Chris's face goes from pink to red. He looks like he's about to explode. Sheriff Stilinski continues to flip through the pictures, all of which are of the girls in their bathing suits. "In case you would like some context," he says, "the day after the full moon, the pack stayed at my house. The boys were restless, so I had them doing yard work in the back. The girls elected to sunbathe out front. I did not think this was going to be a problem. Clearly, I was incorrect. When Styles got up for the day and realized that the hunters were there, he went over and politely asked them if they would leave, as the pack did not plan on going anywhere that day and did not need to be, shall we say, surveilled. They refused, and I think we can all agree that even if surveillance was necessary, these photographs do not qualify. In case you are wondering, no, I am not skipping pictures. There are virtually no pictures of the boys in here, except for one group shot as they entered the house in the morning." Stilinski turns off the phone and puts it back in the evidence bag, then strips off his gloves. "I'm sure you can agree that this makes the situation much more serious," he says, "and you can imagine how this will look to any jury, that this man was taking provocative pictures of these girls shortly before trying to shoot them in the woods. In the absence of werewolves, well, you know what conclusions the jury will come to, and frankly, I'm not 100% sure that they would be wrong. Of course, we will need your cooperation in corroborating some of the evidence if we wish to press additional charges, such as stalking and harassment. He lets his voice trail off. It takes Chris a few minutes to unclench his jaw long enough to speak. Yes, he grinds out. I would like to press every available charge, thank you. Stiles has to bite back a grin. He hadn't really doubted what Chris's reaction to the pictures was going to be, but it's good to have it confirmed. Then to start with, I'm going to need you to give a statement, Stilinski says, still completely calm, detailing who these men were, how you knew them, the circumstances under which they arrived at your house. It would be helpful if you could mention that your daughter has been staying with friends for several days, because the house guests made her uncomfortable. Chris nods. Of course, all of this is 100% true. I'll leave it up to you how much you would like to elaborate. Stilinski says. There's going to be a problem, Chris says. I can't explain why I let them continue to stay with me if they made my daughter uncomfortable, or why she or I didn't report this behavior to the authorities. Or, he adds, directing his attention here to Stiles, why you didn't call the police when they were at your house the other day. You didn't throw them out or call the police because all you had to go on was that he gave Allison a creepy feeling, Stiles says. You figured it was just easier to let her stay with friends for a few days than to try to raise a fuss. She was probably just overreacting. Teenage girls do that sometimes. He shrugs and says, you won't win any Father of the Year awards for it, but it's an understandable reaction. As for me, I didn't call the authorities when they were outside my house because I didn't realize they were taking photos. And when I asked them to leave, they just told me it was a free country and there was nothing illegal about being parked on the side of the road. I don't like to do anything that might reflect poorly on my father, the sheriff, so I decided to let it go. Chris gives a slow nod. I'd like to call my wife, he says, and then I'll be happy to give you a statement. That's fine, Stilinski says. They hear shouting outside. A woman's voice, vicious and angry. It's Vivian. Chris's head jerks around and his eyes narrow. Before either Stiles or his father can do anything, he's on his feet and out of the room. Both Stilinski's grimace and hurry after him. Stiles is yet again left behind as he has to fumble for the damned crutches. Vivian is standing at the front desk, shouting at poor Sandy, who's working the overnight shift. Something about unnecessary arrests and police harassment. Sheriff Stilinski is about to intervene when she catches sight of Chris and lays into him. You useless bastard! What the fuck have you been doing down here if it isn't getting the others out of holding? What the fuck have you been doing shooting at my daughter? Chris shouts. Vivian immediately becomes shifty-eyed. No one was shooting anyone. Are you some kind of idiot? Chris asks. Did I not warn you that this was going to happen? That my father isn't behind bars for the rest of his life because this kid asked nicely? It's because he built a case that would get a conviction. Why are your men still in holding? Because they got caught shooting at teenagers with rifles. No judge in this country is going to set bail for them. Vivian folds her arms over her chest. We have friends in high places. Not in this county, you don't, Chris says. Stiles has spent the last 4 months convincing all of them to go elsewhere. Stiles looks at the ceiling innocently as Vivian focuses on him. Do you have even the slightest notion how screwed those guys are? Chris asks, waving in the vague direction of the holding cells. Did you know about the photographs? Vivian's face reddened. What photographs? Don't pull that bullshit on me, Chris growls. You knew damn well they were taking surveillance photographs. It's part of our job. Photographing my daughter in a swimsuit while she's sleeping is not anybody's job. Sheriff Stilinski clears his throat. Excuse me, he says. Mr. Argent, you said you needed to go call your wife? Why don't you do that? I need to have a private conversation with Ms. Her face reddening, Vivian says, There's going to be no conversation, private or otherwise, she snaps. Okay, Stalinsky says. Then you're under arrest. She just stares at him. What? You can't! Yes, I absolutely can, he says, pulling out handcuffs. Because I have every reason to suspect you were also in the woods, pulling a trigger. I have witnesses who say gunshots were coming from five directions. You are a known associate of the men in custody who arrived in town several days ago with your own firearms and were staying in a house with one of the victims. He waves to a couple of his men as he gets the handcuffs on Vivian. Please process this woman and check her hands for gunpowder residue, he says, and the officers nod, taking her by the elbows. She's still protesting loudly as they pull her down the hallway. Nothing will stick, Stalinsky says once she's gone. Unless she was actually stupid enough not to clean up before she came here. But damn if that wasn't satisfying. Stiles gives his father a heartfelt grin. You are the best dad ever, he says. Stalinsky reaches out and tousles Stiles' hair. I'm just glad you guys are okay. To Chris, he says, please tell your wife not to actually set their belongings on fire. It's been a long enough night. Chris huffs and stomps off. Stiles realizes, for the first time, that it's past 2 o'clock in the morning, and he's more than a little tired. He leans against his father, who still has several hours of work ahead of him. Eric has fallen asleep in one of the chairs in the lobby. Derek is standing on the front steps, where he's been the entire time, his unhappiness clear in the set of his jaw. Sheriff Stalinsky follows Stiles' gaze and frowns a little. He okay? No, Stiles says. I don't think he is. What happened? His father asks. Stiles rubs a hand over the back of his head and says, I may have, kissed Erica a little. There's a moment of silence. Oh, Stalinsky says. Or, a lot? I see. Yep. You and Derek might want to have a conversation about that. You're not wrong, Stiles yawns. But for now, I'd rather have a nap. I'll see you in the morning? His father nods. You go get some sleep. As much as Stiles desperately wants some sleep, he doesn't dare go back to the house with only Derek and Erica for company. As soon as one of them touched him, the other might snap, literally. So they head back to the hospital. Lydia's mother has gone home. Allison has been moved to a room, but her mother is with her, and none of them can withstand Victoria's laser gaze. So the group is camped out in one of the lobbies not far away. Isaac is slumped in an armchair with Lydia on his lap. Her head is resting against his shoulder, and they're both sound asleep. Scott is on a small sofa, his head nodding. Stiles immediately plops down next to him, spreading out so there's no room for anyone else, propping his foot up on the chair across from him. Now that business is dealt with, he finally allows himself to take one of the glorious painkillers. Erica sits down on the floor beside Isaac and leans against his legs, closing her eyes. Derek settles into a corner by himself, which is definitely a bad sign. Stiles knows that he should deal with it, but he's just too tired. He pulls out his phone and sees that he's missed 3 texts from Justin. Given how abruptly their phone call ended, he's not surprised. He texts back to let Justin know that he's okay. They got attacked by hunters, but everyone got away. After some consideration, he asks, Did Callie go off by herself in the last 24 hours? Yeah, she flounced off after the beta interviews, Justin replies. Why? Why do you think? Stiles sends back. Justin doesn't respond. After a while, Stiles starts to feel foggy from the drugs. He slumps over and falls asleep. Chris Argent turns up at 7:30, and the doctors are discharging Allison. This nearly turns into an argument when Chris states that Allison is coming home. I agreed she could stay with you while the hunters were at our house, he says. They're no longer staying with us. Therefore, Allison is going to come home with me. Okay, Stiles says, if you're willing to have the entire pack stay under your roof. Chris glares at him. That's not necessary. You bet your ass it's necessary. There's still one hunter out there, and God only knows what the Alpha Pack is going to think of this. We're all staying together. End of story. She's my daughter, Chris growls. This seems like it might go on for some time, until Allison settles the issue by saying, Oh my God, Dad! Don't even make me climb out my window with stitches in my ass, because I will! Grudgingly, Chris gives in. He delivers some graphic threats as to what he will do if Allison is not kept safe, and then stalks away. The others trudge out to the parking lot. Scott's mother took a taxi home from work that morning, so they would have a second car to use later. Lydia and Isaac, having slept several hours in the hospital, are proclaimed the most fit to drive. Isaac drives the Jeep, and Lydia drives Ms. McCall's car. Even the people who got some sleep in the hospital are exhausted, and Allison's still pretty doped up, so they decide to crash and get another 4 hours or so of sleep. Stiles sets the alarm for noon, and takes another one of his painkillers before falling into bed. They're all still sound asleep when the alarm goes off, and groan as they drag themselves out of bed. Scott freaks out when he realizes that he never called Dr. Deaton to let him know he wasn't going to be at work, and that wakes everybody up as he scrambles for his phone. Stiles listens to one side of the conversation as he pulls jeans and a t-shirt on. He tests his ankle gingerly and finds that it will support his weight, but not without sending red-hot streaks of pain up his leg. It's Scott. I'm so sorry I didn't... Oh, really? There's a pause. Wow. Okay. Okay. Uh-huh. A pause. Okay, I'll see you tomorrow. Sorry. What's up? Stiles asks as Scott tucks his phone away. Apparently we're front page news, Scott says. He read all about it in the paper this morning.
People still read newspapers?
Lydia asks, yawning. I'm speaking figuratively, Scott says. But yeah, we're news. We're national news. Shit, really? Stiles grabs his phone and pulls up CNN's website. Indeed. There's a breaking news story about how three men with rifles started shooting at a group of teenagers in the woods, eventually cornering them in an abandoned house. Two people were taken to the hospital with minor wounds. Both have been treated and released. The perpetrators are identified as Joseph O'Malley, 37, Luis Gutierrez, 29, and Stanley Barlow, 32. The victims' names have not been released, but it is mentioned that one of them is the son of the local sheriff. A fourth person has been arrested in connection with the crime, but is not named. It's a bare-bones story, very much the kind that a website slaps up before a lot of details have been released. There's nothing about the stalking or the photographs, and no quotes from any officials. The comment section is filled with the typical head-shaking about what the world is coming to, and a lively, if ugly, debate about gun control. Damn, we're famous, Stiles says, grinning. Only you could be happy about this, Isaac says, shaking his head. Once he stops and thinks about it, though, Stiles isn't sure this is a good thing. A lot of publicity means a lot of scrutiny. He'll need to be sure his case is airtight. Okay, friends and neighbors, he says. Let's have a talk about exactly what happened over the past few days, and then we'll go down to the station and give our statements. He goes over it in excruciating detail. Allison's initial impressions of the visitors, what she told Scott about them, what she told her father about them, the way her father half brushed her off, but then said, I guess you can stay with friends for a few days if he's really bothering you. Scott's opinion, as Allison's boyfriend, the sunbathing incident, the photographs, the shooting. He gives them all individual things to have noticed or thought of, so their statements wouldn't seem like they had come up with them together. He even gives them a couple of incorrect assumptions or facts, things he knows won't damage them in court, but will lend a ring of truth to their story. One thing that worries him is Derek's presence. The rest of them are all 16 and 17. Derek is several years older. For him to have been hanging out with them will look strange, but the fact that he was there when the police arrived and that they wound up in his old house means they can't pretend he wasn't. After several minutes racking his brain, he can't think of anything. Derek will just have to be a guy who likes hanging out with teenagers, and they'll hope nobody finds it creepy. He stops by the local coffee shop to get a bunch of cappuccinos, lattes, and other froofy drinks to bring to the station. Bribery is always a great bet with his father's officers, and indeed, they are met with enthusiasm. Plus, as a bonus, he gets coffee for himself, so he's moderately wired when he gets to the station. They're all separated to give their statements. After that, the others are slumped around the lobby, and he goes to find his father. Sheriff Stilinski is sleep-deprived and somewhat grumpy. "Vivian still here?" Stiles asks, sipping his third cup of coffee. Stilinski shakes his head. "No, we decided in the end we couldn't bring charges against her. We just don't have enough proof she was involved. Ballistics had been collecting bullets in the woods all morning, and the guns have been confiscated from the Argent house. But I bet she hid that one or threw it away. And even if it belongs to her, we can't prove she was the one firing it. We'll have to settle for the three we've got." He pushes one hand through his hair and says, "It's a madhouse here. There have been reporters calling all damn morning." "You want me to deal with them?" Stiles asks brightly. Stilinski gives him a narrow-eyed look. "Son, there are few things I want less than to put you on the phone with reporters." "Fair," Stiles says. "Hey, so I need your help solving a 5-year-old murder." His father gives him a pointed look. Stiles just returns it with an innocent smile. "I suppose pointing out that I don't have time for this won't get me anywhere," he finally says. "Right," Stiles says, and launches into it. "So the reason we were in the woods last night, unarmed and helpless, was because Callie texted me and told me to be there. For a trial, or so I assumed. Okay, maybe the hunters just jumped at the chance, but Derek is sure all 5 of them were there last night." "The ballistics so far would suggest that he's correct," Stilinski says. "Okay, so this whole time, the hunters have been split into 2 groups. One group following us, and the other group shadowing the Alpha Pack. So why were all 5 of them in the woods last night?" "Because Callie told them you were going to be there," Stilinski says, nodding slowly. "Callie set you up. She's working with the hunters." "Which is an anathema to pretty much any werewolf," Stiles says. "Just the fact that we set up a truce with the local hunters seems to piss off the Alpha Pack, along with that pack that tried to take our territory back in March. So if I can prove this, Callie is going to be in deep. She goes off by herself sometimes, too, which I've noticed none of the other alphas do." "What does any of this have to do with a murder that took place 5 years ago?" Stilinski asks. Stiles digs through his drawers and pulls out the dossier he had been looking at earlier on Trevor St. John. "This is the previous Alpha Pack leader," he says. "He was killed 5 years ago. He took 2 in the chest. I figured that it was fatal because the bullets were laced with wolfsbane."
"Okay, so?"
"So, they weren't," Stiles says. "Back when Derek was shot, he mentioned that the form of wolfsbane used, Nordic blue monk's hood, was actually really rare. Wolfsbane seems to be more of an Argent family thing than a hunter thing. The bullets used last night were standard steel. Otherwise, we would have been in way more trouble. But in that case, Trevor shouldn't have died from these wounds." Stilinski is frowning.
"Okay, so what have you been thinking?"
"I'm not sure yet," Stiles says. "Vivian bragged that Trevor went down easy, and that they killed another wolf at the same time. I've done a little research into that. Another body was found, not too far from Trevor's, a guy named Haji. He took 2 bullets, and then they cut him in half."
"Which is a standard hunter thing to do,"
Stilinski says. "Right. So why didn't they do that to Trevor?" Stiles shrugs. "My guess is because he was already dead. But that doesn't make any sense.
Even most betas could shrug off two to the chest, as long as they didn't puncture both lungs or hit the heart or anything. Derek was hurt worse than that when Peter got him that night at the high school, and he recovered just fine. You think Callie did something? Stilinski asks cautiously. Son, that's one hell of an accusation without a lot of proof.
I know, Stiles says. But she had the motive. She was next in line for the pack leader position, and she was pissed at Trevor because he was in charge of her. When Callie was trying to coerce Laura into the pack, Trevor's the one who told her to knock it off. Callie, the thing is, she may honestly be a psychopath. When she wants something, she gets it. She doesn't back off. She doesn't give up. The only reason she eventually left Laura alone has to have been because Trevor told her that the Alpha Pack was leaving, either with or without her. And then they got into an argument over Justin. Callie didn't want him in the Alpha Pack, but Trevor took him in anyway, and Justin was a threat to her. Right now, he's probably the biggest threat. So why hasn't she had the hunters kill him? Stilinski asks. She might just not have had the opportunity, Stiles says. It can't happen every day. It took almost 4 years for her to have a chance at Trevor, if she decided to kill him right after the thing with Laura. You better tell Justin to watch his back, Stilinski says. Already done, Stiles says, thinking back to the exchange of text messages early that morning. If not in so many words. But if I can prove this, I can turn the Alpha Pack against Callie. Okay, what do you need from me? I need all the material regarding Trevor's murder, Stiles says. Haji's, too. They're both unsolved. I mean, I know who killed them, but we can't prove that it was Vivian. But there's something else going on there, and I want to tease it out. And I need as much information on Callie as I can get. I'll see what I can do, Stilinski says. Did you talk to Derek yet?
No, Stiles says.
His father replies. I've been a little preoccupied, Stiles points out. His father says again. Stiles huffs out a sigh. I'm just going to go keep myself busy until you've gotten that information for me, okay? Maybe go talk to a reporter or two.
Stilinski closes his folder. You'll probably have to eventually, if we're going to be honest. What with all the mass shootings lately, this is not small news. Talk to your pack about it.
I will. None of them wanted to split up, which is problematic because almost all of them have parents who want to hover. Isaac is the lone exception. Even Lydia's mother is concerned. After some debate, Melissa McCall offers to have everyone over and invite the parents as well. She even calls up Chris and Victoria and tells them that they're welcome to come. Nobody expects them to show up, but they do. Chris brings a bottle of wine. Victoria stiffly ignores everyone present, but gives Allison a hug that lasts almost 2 minutes. Mrs. Martin is not in the know about werewolves, and to be honest, nobody wants to talk about what happened anyway. So Stiles declares certain subjects taboo, and everyone agrees. They grill some steaks and eat on the back porch in the nice weather. The names of the victims have been released to the press, and the phone is ringing off the hook. Melissa unplugs it after the first 3 times she tells a reporter that her son is not planning to speak to anyone at this time. They enjoy the fading sunlight and talk about lacrosse, about colleges, about summer plans. The Argents are still planning their trip to France. Lydia wants to go to Los Angeles and San Francisco to look around some college campuses. Scott's mom is planning their annual 3-day weekend trip to his parents in exciting Barstow. Derek sits in rigid silence the entire time, but this is not particularly surprising, given their current company. He and Chris Argent just try not to look at each other. Sheriff Stilinski comes in just after dinner, obviously exhausted. He gets a plate of food and updates them between quick bites. All 3 of the men have lawyered up, and they're getting all the charges sorted out. O'Malley is getting the worst of it, which suits Stiles just fine. Lewis might have been an asshole to him, but at least he didn't treat him like a harmless kid and then literally tried to shoot him in the back.
There's assault with a deadly weapon, attempted murder, stalking, harassment, plus a few weapons charges. Most of these have at least 7 counts attached to them. If we're lucky, he says, slathering butter onto his baked potato and ignoring Stiles' patented cholesterol frown, they'll enter a plea. Bargain down from attempted murder by pleading guilty to the assault and weapons charges. That's the best case scenario. They'll get at least 20 years for everything put together, and we won't have to worry about a trial. Chris scowls. He obviously thinks that there isn't enough jail time in the world for whoever it was who shot his little girl. Will it be problematic that we don't know who fired the shots that actually caused injury? He asks. I don't think so, Stilinski says. It might be if somebody had actually died and we had to prove who fired the killing shot, but thankfully nobody did. There's a brief moment where every parent in the room takes a moment to hug their respective child. Sheriff Stilinski hooks an arm around Isaac's shoulders, too, pulling him into an embrace. Derek sits there and looks horribly awkward and depressed. Then Stilinski's phone rings. He sighs and reaches for it. I can't get away from them, he says. Set up a press conference, Stiles says. Tomorrow at, let's say, noon. Easy to remember. Those of us who are going to talk to the reporters can do it together. Stilinski looks surprised for a few moments, but then nods and picks up the phone. He tucks it against his ear and wanders away from the table so he can discuss the details. So, who? Scott asks. Stiles looks around at his pack. Isaac is too shy. He's horrible at public speaking. Erica would be fine, except that if someone antagonizes her, her language turns vulgar extremely quickly. Lydia, you are our public face, he says, since you made the 911 call. You can do that? He asks, and she nods. Scott, you too, Stiles continues, because you were the brave medic. Scott makes a face. Look at it this way, Stiles says. Fuck your chemistry grade. Every med school in the country will let you in after this. There's a general laugh at this, and Scott agrees. I have to work. Like Dr. Deaton will not be understanding of the fact that you need to take some time off after this, Stiles says, rolling his eyes. I'll give a statement. I sort of have to, being that I was injured and am this sheriff's son, but I'd rather keep the spotlight on you two and Allison. Victoria scowls. Allison, I really don't want you talking to any reporters. I won't make you, Stiles says, if you really don't want to. Allison shifts, a little uncomfortable. How about I just don't talk much? Kind of like you? Okay, Stiles says agreeably. Victoria's frown fades very slightly. I know that you're going to be the focus of this because of the pictures, but you don't have to say anything to the reporters. Just make sure to say how grateful you are to the police and to Scott and Lydia for helping you, he adds, and she nods, leaning into Scott's shoulder for a minute. The conversation gradually peters out. Stiles wants to get back to looking through the information he's scrounged up on Trevor and Callie, but it's impossible to get away from the parents. They continue to sit together even after the silence is growing awkward. Well, Mrs. Martin finally says, we should be getting home. I figured the kids would just sleep here tonight, Melissa says brightly. I don't mind. It would make them feel better. And Tom's going to sleep on the sofa, so he'll be here too. Well, Erica leans over and whispers, who's Tom? Stiles gives her a funny look. My father. Oh! Erica lets out a little snicker. You know, I've always just called him Papa Stilinski. I don't think it ever occurred to me that he had a first name. There's hemming and hawing from almost all quarters, but eventually parental worries are soothed by the fact that the sheriff and a trained ER nurse will both be on hand. Chris and Victoria are the last to leave. Victoria thanks Melissa for having them, a little less standoffishly than she had been at the beginning of the night. Chris gets Allison's crossbow from the car, now that Ms. Martin and Erica's parents have departed. She takes it like it's a life raft and gives him a long hug. Once they're gone, the pack adjourns to Scott's room,
where Stiles continues to go through the data he's collected. He's found some fascinating things. "Derek," he said, tapping his finger against his laptop, "you said that becoming a werewolf doesn't always cure congenital conditions, right?"
"Right," Derek says, glancing up. "Technically, Scott is still asthmatic, and Erica is still epileptic. It's just that their body will correct the problem." "Why?"
"Because I'm finding all these medical records for Trevor," Stiles says. "Back from when he was a kid and a young teenager. But they stopped pretty abruptly around the age of 13, which is presumably when he was turned."
"What kind of records?" Scott asks, hanging upside down off his bed. He frowns and adds, "And how are you getting them? That stuff usually isn't available."
"Apparently, whoever investigated Trevor's murder dug it all up, and it's been included in his police file," Stiles says. "But what's frustrating is that they didn't really do a detailed autopsy. He'd taken 2 bullets to the chest. Cause of death was pretty obvious. They did a tox screen, but everything was negative."
"Then why did they dig up his medical files?" Lydia asks.
"Apparently, they received an anonymous tip that it might be relevant," Stiles says, and throws his hands up in the air. "Whoever the hell..."
"Maybe one of the other alphas suspected something wrong."
Allison is lying on her stomach, next to Scott, with her chin propped in her hands. "There was one more alpha killed between Traveler's death and now, right?"
"Right," Stiles says. "Vivian says they've gotten 3 in the past 5 to 10 years, so that could be it. Someone knew Callie set Trevor up and was looking into it, so maybe Callie got that alpha killed as well."
"The funny thing is that she doesn't really seem so calculating," Lydia says, frowning. "I mean, to be honest, she comes off more as a spoiled brat who throws tantrums when she doesn't get her way. Are we really giving her credit for putting all this together?"
"Maybe it's an act,"
Isaac suggests.
"Or maybe Vivian's calling the shots," Scott adds. Stiles lets out a snort and says,
"Frankly, Vivian doesn't seem a lot smarter."
"I don't know. You have a point, Lydia. But at the same time, pretty much every time we see Callie, she's taken off guard or pissed off or both. She's certainly been clever enough about the tasks. She's been able to get inside my head and know what would piss me off. Like going after Derek, or forcing me to sit by and say nothing while they grill you. She knew exactly what to say to Derek to make him lose control. We don't really know Callie."
"Maybe we should talk to her family," Allison says. "I mean, you said she's from a long-standing werewolf family. They might know things we don't. They might be willing to tell us."
"Yeah, maybe," Stiles agrees. "Anyway, so Trevor had a heart condition. I don't know 3/4 of these words, but it looks like he was subject to arrhythmias. I think I'd have to spend an hour on Wikipedia before I would really understand it. Looks like he was hospitalized several times as a child, but none after the turn."
"So what in Christ does it have to do with him being killed by bullets?" Erica asks.
"Actually," Derek speaks up suddenly, "it might have everything to do with it. It's an extremely stressful situation. It could cause an attack, just like it might cause an asthma attack in Scott. The body wouldn't know which to heal first."
"Yeah, but I've been shot," Scott says. "I didn't die from it."
"You got immediate medical attention both times," Derek says. "Trevor didn't. And a cardiac arrhythmia is a lot more dangerous than an asthma attack."
"This is all really interesting," Lydia says, "but none of it proves that Callie had anything to do with his death. It only proves that the hunters were lucky he went down easily, because of a pre-existing medical condition that they may or may not have known anything about."
"No, but this might," Stiles says, flipping through another page.
"Medical records indicate that Trevor had a rescue medication for his condition, and the pharmacy records show that he filled it regularly and recently prior to his death. Scott, you still carry your inhaler, right?" he asks.
Scott nods. "Just in case."
"And Trevor carried his meds, just in case,"
Stiles says, but none were found on his body. And that might actually prove something. He rubs his hands over his face and looks at the clock. It's almost 10, and he's been buried in data all day. I'm wiped. I think I'm going to get some sleep. You guys can stay up if you want. It won't bother me. He drags out one of the egg crates and a blanket, takes a quick shower, and sets up a nest in the corner of Scott's room. Allison and Lydia have opted to go to bed as well, and both of them are already asleep. Scott's lying in bed with Allison, playing on his phone. Isaac is flopped down with a book, and Erica has borrowed Stiles' laptop to surf the internet. Derek is in wolf form, and when Stiles comes back from in the shower, he's curled up on the very edge of the egg crate. He looks up as Stiles approaches, ears back and down, brow furrowed with a worried expression, his entire body pressed low to the floor. Stiles half collapses onto the egg crate and pats the space next to him. Derek slinks up to join him, and Stiles presses his face into the wolf's fur with a slight sigh of relief. For now, they don't have to talk about it. They'll work it out somehow. It's a comforting thought as he drifts off to sleep.